It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, Giants fans? Welcome to the latest episode of the Talk is Cheap podcast from NJ Advanced Media, the Star Ledger, NJ.com. Daryl Slater here with you, Bob Brookover as well. Wednesday morning right now, September the 27th. We're going to talk all things Giants here for the next bit. And obviously a lot to go through. It's been about a week since the 49er game, so we don't, you know, we're kind of going to talk about that in the context of the big picture and how they can move forward from what was another bad loss against an elite team. They've now lost two games to really good teams, the Cowboys and the Niners. They've played exactly one good half all year, that being the epic comeback in the second half against Arizona, which, you know, maybe the Cardinals are better than we thought. But bottom line is that was a should-win game for the Giants. They won it. The other two games, you can kind of understand why they lost, but now they're sitting here 1-2. They got three tough ones coming up next Monday night against Seattle, then at Miami, then at Buffalo. So this three-game stretch is really going to determine the direction of their season. I think if they go 0-3, you can probably just call it. They probably need to get back to 3-3 by the time they leave Buffalo on the 15th of October. And we'll get into that much more. And Bob, how you doing?
Doing well, Daryl. Back from the West Coast, catching up on my sleep. I'm almost there.
Yeah, and the Giants got back themselves talking to players yesterday in the locker room. They did have media access and a walkthrough practice yesterday on Tuesday. They are off today here on Wednesday, and then back to their regular schedule on Thursday tomorrow, which is really the normal Wednesday. But talking to guys in the locker room, they mentioned, you know, how late slash early they got back Friday morning, taking the essentially, you know, a red eye. They got the weekend to kind of catch up, and now they have to regroup and play a tough Seahawks team. And I guess we can just kind of go through this in terms of the issues currently facing this Giants team, and we can start most broadly, and that would be the first half struggles. The Giants have been outscored 63-6 in the first half, of course, 26-0 in week one, then 20-0. And then 17-6 in San Francisco, where they fell behind by 14 points. They have two field goals in the first half. Their defense has allowed 50 points in the first half. There's just so many ways to slice and describe just how bad this team has been in the first half. And, you know, really, you fall behind by 14 points. Typically in the NFL, you're not going to win. Like, it's hard to come back from that. Like, a 14-point comeback is rare, let alone a 21. What do you make of their struggles in the first half?
I mean, it's a recipe for disaster is what it is. And, you know, if not for the second half of the Cardinals game, this would be a disaster. And we might already be saying this season is pretty much toast. But that second half in Arizona gives them some hope. You know, I think this week's huge, and they can't continue to start the way they did. The funny thing is, a lot of them, and this is directly after the game in San Francisco, a lot of guys in the locker room didn't think they had started that bad in San Francisco, which may be a reflection of how bad the first two games were in the first half. I could understand a little bit what they were saying. You know, they didn't, you know, the 49ers didn't put up big numbers against them. They were still in the game when they left the field. Offensively, they hadn't done anything at that point. You know, they were fortunate that they had Graham Gano, who kicks 50 yarders like they're extra points. But, you know, they were still down, and they were still in trouble, and they probably played a worse second half where they just got eaten alive by yards after the catch and not being, which you wrote about today, just not being able to tackle guys after they got, after they catch the ball. The stat was 201 yards after the catch. The Giants had 150 total yards, and the 49ers had more after the catch than they had total. I don't know that the Giants absolutely know what the answer is to starting better. The only good start they had was the first drive of the season, and it ended in disaster, and they've been not good in the first half ever since.
Yeah, and on both sides of the ball, it's not, I mean, obviously, you're when you score two field goals over the course of three games, it really doesn't, in the first half, it doesn't matter how your defense have played in that half, but they've allowed 50 points defensively in the first half, and there's just so many things that are wrong with this team right now on both sides of the ball. Obviously, offensively, they were absolutely inept in San Francisco, suburban San Jose, whatever you call it, and that's just not sustainable. I mean, 150 yards, which tied for their fewest since 06. Like, I don't care how well your defense plays. You're not winning a game with 150 yards in the NFL, unless it's a total outlier. So, yeah, I mean, the slow starts on both sides of the ball, a huge issue. And kind of compounding that is the absence, at least in week three at the Niners, of some significantly important players. We talk about Saquon Barkley, Ben Bredesen, and Andrew Thomas, most notably, and of course, Azeez Ojulari on the defensive side of the ball. Just real quick, injury update wise, where these guys are at. Well, and first of all, Deontay Banks is okay. He hurt his arm. We'll see on DJ Davidson, but obviously he's not a top line player. He has an elbow injury. Andrew Thomas, TBD, I think, for Monday night. Saquon Barkley, same thing with it's a high ankle sprain for Monday night. Ben Bredesen should be good to go, which is a good thing for the Giants. He's their most consistent guard, and they need him. And then Azeez Ojulari, we'll see. So there's still some questions about if they're going to be able to have, most notably, Saquon Barkley and Andrew Thomas for Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, they should be healthier, I think, though. I think there's a pretty good chance they get Bredesen and Andrew Thomas, and then they still got to figure out exactly what their offensive line is, although, Brian Daboll seems to know what his offensive line is, at least that's what he said yesterday, which, it's going from left to right is Andrew Thomas, when they're all healthy, Andrew Thomas left tackle, Ben Bredesen left guard, John Michael Schmidt center, Marcus McKeithen's going to continue to play at right guard, and then Evan Neal, is going to continue to play at right tackle, despite three really tough games after a difficult rookie season. He's, they're sticking with him and they're hoping that he can turn things around. But even, it will be better with Andrew Thomas and Ben Bredesen, but there's still questions on that offensive line. And if those don't get answered, everything we're talking about doesn't really matter. So
you said it. I mean, that's so true. I mean, we can talk all we want about how important it is to get Andrew Thomas and Ben Bredesen back on the left side of that line. That's true. It is. But the other three spots have been very inconsistent at best. I mean, you got a rookie center who's been inconsistent, unsurprisingly, in Schmitz. The right guard spot has not produced much of anything in terms of whether it's Glowinski or Marcus McKeithen, who you figured would have growing pains. They're pretty committed to keeping Glowinski on the bench, obviously. And I think ditto for Josh Azudu. They like McKeithen better. Otherwise, Azudu would be playing left guard and Bredesen would be playing right guard. But instead, they go with Bredesen when everyone's healthy at left and McKeithen at right. And of course, Evan Neal, rather. We all know how much, I think he's teetering on bust status at this point. He's got another, I would say, half to three quarters of the season to get this thing figured out before we can just say maybe this guy just doesn't have it, especially as a pass blocker. Daniel's right. Under pressure 47% of the time. And that's not sustainable.
No, it's not. And it would be shocking if he was a bust, because he's a seventh overall pick. I mean, it's not like other teams weren't, you don't get to be a seventh overall pick with just one team being in love with you, so it would really be shocking if he wasn't. It would also be shocking because of the way he goes about his business. I mean, he's a very professional, guy who is working hard to get better. It just hasn't translated to the field yet. But you know, he goes about his business, right? He's an Alabama kid, so you know he played at a high level program and obviously had success there against, you know, the tough SEC guys. So it would be surprising if he ended up being a bust. But so far, you know, so far no good.
Yeah, he is not a guy who is resistant to coaching and who is immature. I mean, obviously, those things were both the case for Eric Flowers when he was with the Giants, and he was a bust. And so that's not what's happening here. I think the issue is either this guy can play at this level or he can't. And a lot of it just comes down to, can they protect Daniel Jones, especially if you don't have Saquon Barkley and teams are going to do what the Niners did, and they're just going to go after Daniel Jones. And he was pressured 44% of the time in that game, 67% in week one, and 30% against Arizona, which, you know, the Giants won that game. I mean, just for context, I mean, to be pressured on 47% of your dropbacks, okay, so, like, is that a lot? Yeah, well, that's a lot. So last year it was 42. And then from in Jones's first 3 years, 2019 to 2021, it was 42%, 40%, and 34%. So he's been pressured a lot. I mean, this team has struggled to pass block, but even for the Giants, 47% pressure rate is extremely high. And the Seahawks come in, I think, 11th in PFF's pass rush ratings. And so that's the formula. If you don't have the Giants don't have Saquon Barkley, I mean, teams are going to go after Daniel Jones, and the offensive line needs to be ready. And more than just ready, capable of protecting them.
Yeah, I mean, they had no running game really to speak of against the 49ers. I think the running backs ran it six times for 20. I don't know. Not. They didn't. I know that they didn't run it at all after Brady scored an 8-yard touchdown run early in the second half, and then they did not run the football again after that play. So there was no running game to speak of. And without that, you know, what prevents teams from just coming after Daniel Jones playing a really aggressive style of defense? There's nothing preventing that at all right now. You talked about the injuries, and that's the big, you know, obviously he's the big one. Is he going to be back? I would say doubtful at this point, but who knows?
Yeah, and that kind of goes hand in hand with falling behind. You're going to have to throw the ball to catch up. When you fall behind, you become one-dimensional. And then when you have an offensive line that can't pass block particularly well, it's a nightmare. It's a recipe for disaster. And so a lot
of but in that game, they got to within 17-12. They went for two. I'm not sure I agree with that decision that Brian Daboll made there, because when they don't get it, are you taking away some of your team's momentum? You're chasing points really early in the game. I know the analytics say that's the best thing to do there, because you can get it later. But to me, you didn't need to do it there. And sometimes you just got to go with your gut. Like, all right, things are going well. But my point is, okay, so then the 49ers go down, they hold them to a field goal. So now it's 20-12. And then they hold them to another field goal, 23-12. But you never really even tried to get back into the running game, you know. And I know Matt Breida's not Saquon Barkley, but he's not a bad back either. He's, you know, when given a chance, he's been a pretty good back in this league.
And, yeah, they certainly need Barkley back to help keep these defenses more off balance. And it did come out, like, right before the Niner game that he told Taylor Rooks from Amazon, which is broadcasting the game, that he is dealing with a high ankle sprain, not a lateral low ankle sprain. And so, okay, so like a high ankle sprain is typically more difficult to recover from. He had a high ankle sprain in the same leg in 2019. It cost him just shy of a month. It was three games. And then 2021, he had a low ankle sprain to the other ankle on the left side. That cost him about a month also. So maybe it doesn't matter. You know, maybe this isn't as severe of a high ankle sprain as 2019. Either way, I think it's probably a stretch that he's ready for next Monday night, because that would be 2 weeks and a day after he got hurt. So, you know, I just think that would be quick to come back. And I understand the logic here about it's pain tolerance. Okay. Obviously, yes. And typically you can't hurt a high ankle sprain worse by playing through it. And if you can fight through the pain or take a shot or whatever, but You know, when you're in pain, it's hard for your body to respond in the way to like go run away from tacklers. And so you're potentially exposing yourself to further injury, like, you know, a concussion or something like that. If you get hung up and you're a step slow, you really don't want that. I mean, and so, and obviously, you know, when you're a step slow as a running back, period, your whole job is to run away from people. So, I get the whole pain tolerance thing. But that's not to, you can't just minimize it and say, oh, you can't make it worse. By playing through it. I'm sorry, but like the toughest person in the world trying to run on a serious or even a moderate ankle sprain, it's going to hurt like crazy. So yeah, that's what they're dealing with. And he came back too quickly from a high ankle sprain in 2019 by his own admission. He wasn't really right the rest of the year. Unfortunately for the Giants, they don't have a lot of wiggle room here. You know, they need to accomplish some things these next 3 weeks or their season might be over. So I can understand why he would want to rush back.
You said at the top of this, they got to be 3-3. And I'd like to say they could survive a 2-4, you know, because I just don't see them beating the Dolphins or the Bills on the road. So that makes this week's game just vital. And certainly no pushover game there. But if they could get to 2-4, you know, you look ahead to the schedule. You can see a way they could get to 5-4 after that, going against the Jets, Commanders, and Raiders. You know, so that would be, you know, one of the things you're looking at. The schedule really does soften in the middle of it. I know we don't want to go right into the schedule right now, but yeah, getting back to Barkley, I think they're just going to have to deal without him here for a few weeks and. You know, it's going to be on Daniel Jones's shoulders more than anything else. But you know what? They, you know, Joe Shane went out and supposedly made this receiving core better. And I think he did. I think it's certainly a more talented receiving core. So now we need to see it. I do think despite Barkley not being there, they need to at least try to run, show the run, keep teams a little more honest. It won't be easy against the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are giving up 2.9 yards per carry this season, so that won't be easy, but I think it needs to be done.
And we talk about wiggle room. I mean, they started last year 6-1, of course, and they go to Seattle and lose, but they had, and then they beat the Texans, so they're 7-2, and then they go into that slide. But they had the wiggle room, and really, if they lose this game and start 1-2, the wiggle room is gone. And you mentioned the schedule does loosen up a little bit, so there is potential to get some of this back. But then you'd be fighting to stay at 500 when obviously a 500 record's not getting you into the playoffs. So a lot of reasons why they need guys like Daniel Jones, like their offense, and you know, like their offensive line and Evan Neal to perform better in the absence or likely absence or potential absence of Saquon Barkley. And I think one of those guys is Darren Waller. I wrote about this right after coming out of the game for the next day because he did not play well against the Niners. He had a drop that led directly to an interception. There was another play where the ball was high over the middle. I know Kirk Herbstreit in the broadcast was dinging him for that. I can't knock him for that one. But the other one was just an awful drop that led to a pick. That's the third time, the other two being Saquon Barkley drops, that those type of off the hands plays have led directly to picks for Daniel Jones. Tough breaks. But yeah, the Giants clearly need more from Darren Waller. I mean, he's not hurt. He's not on the injury report, right? So he's not dealing with his hamstring, sciatic nerve pinching and tightness that he was dealing with to start the season. What gives here? They need this guy to play like the guy they invested a third round pick and basically $24 million in over the course of the next 2 years. They need him to play better.
Yeah, I mean, he falls under the category with a lot of people on this team that need to play better. We could make a list and do a whole show on that. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau might be at the top of that list right now. But yeah, he's definitely among those guys that need to play better. He played a good game against Arizona. When they, in the second half comeback, he was in the middle of all of that. They need a lot of guys to play better. And Waller's among them. He's, you know, that was a disappointing game for him. You know, he's supposed to be, you know, he's a tight end, but he's their number one receiver, and they need him to be a number one receiver, especially right now with Saquon Barkley out. So, you know, there's a lot of things this team needs right now, and that certainly is in the group.
Just and I feel like we probably summed up a lot of their problems offensively right now in the broader and more narrow scheme. I mean, the bottom line is they gotta score some points. I mean, you're not gonna win games scoring 12 points and gaining 150 yards. Just not happening. So it doesn't really matter how heroic you're doing. And their defense was not heroic, by the way. We'll get to that, but they gave up 441 yards and most under Wink Martindale, the second most rather. I think that they 245 in the first half. They didn't play well on defense. They needed to be heroic. They were the furthest thing from heroic. But given the fact of how bad they were on offense, they probably weren't winning the game anyway. But they do have some issues defensively that are not exactly helping them, especially when they're so limited currently on offense with Saquon Barkley out in the O-line injuries. And there's a couple things at play here, and they go hand in hand. One of them is missed tackles, and one of them is yards after catch. Obviously, those things are directly related. The Giants missed 16 tackles in San Francisco. That was their most since 2019. PFF had them for 196 yards after the catch, so right around 200. They had a game last year against the Texans, actually, where they allowed 198 after the catch, and they won the game. So that's not like a directly correlated stat to losing. But when you miss 16 tackles and allow 196 yards after the catch against a really good team, you're like almost never going to win the game.
No, I mean, it's just when you give up whatever is 400 to what 115 yards, you're never going to win that game. So, I mean, that they were within 18 points probably tells you right there that you know, the game wasn't that close when you look at it statistically. You know, even going back to the offensive side for a moment, like you wonder if the 49ers figured out a formula for stopping Daniel Jones as a runner, because, you know, the Giants could probably use him more as a runner right now. But he was 2 for 5 in that game. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't get break free to run. You know, they couldn't figure out a way to get him loose to use his legs, because I'm sure they'd like to do that with Saquon out. But, you know, defensively, it was just not a good performance at all. You know, Kayvon is just, you know, he was very defensive the days leading up to that game about his performance, pointing out that, you know, he's asked to do a lot of other things besides rush the passer. And he's right. You know, the Giants have said this before. They ask him to cover. They ask him to set the edge on running plays. But even in that regard, he's not, you know, been a good player right now. You know, if you look at Pro Football Focus rankings, he's, I think, 110th out of 112 edge rushers right now. His grade is 110 out of 112 that qualify. You know, right in front of him is Jihad Ward. So, and Aziz Ojulari doesn't even qualify right now because he hasn't played. So that tells you right there, they've been soft on the edges. You know, they don't have, Kayvon does have a sack now. He did get a sack in the game against the 49ers, but, you know, they just need a lot more from, they need a lot more from their big name players right now. You know, it goes to Waller, it goes to Thibodeau. You know, it goes to the secondary too. You know, Xavier and Adoree need to come up big. Deontay Banks has played pretty good for a rookie, I think. But, you know, they need guys to come up big for them. They're big name players to come up big.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Thibodeau's grades. Okay, like, so how has he done pass rush wise? He has 2 pressures in each of the last 2 games, 0 in week 1, so 4 pressures. Pass rush grades of 56, 51, 53. Pretty average. Run defense, 60 grades of 62, 49, 27. So it's not like he's even been a good run defender. So at least according to PFF's metrics. And so, yes, it's, you have to take into account the things that they're asking him to do in terms of pre-snap calls and recognition and all that stuff. But look, there's a reason they drafted this guy 5th overall. And that was because they thought he could be a dynamic difference-making player who can do a lot of different things. And so he flashed last year, has not taken that next step this year. And so he's one of, as you mentioned, one of several guys in their defense who they currently have issues with, who are currently experiencing issues. And I think another one in that secondary would be Jason Pinnock. He's missed six tackles. Talked to him yesterday, and he said, "Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think there's three I'd like to have back." PFF's got him for six missed tackles, and so they need more from him. But I get it that he's not a high profile player, but this revamped secondary needs to be certainly more secure when they're going up against Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf this week. So, yeah, no, I mean, they're just, this is a team. I don't think anyone was surprised that they lost to the 49ers. It was probably a loss, likely loss going in, even if the Giants were fully healthy, and then they weren't. They got blown off the field. They didn't look like they belonged. The Niners are probably a top three or five team in the NFL. Giants playing in a short week on the road. I get it. They lost, okay? They destroyed their wiggle room by losing to the Cowboys in week one. But the way they've lost these games, especially being so non-competitive in the first half, has really put a kind of a glaring spotlight on a lot of their flaws, right? They're a pretty ugly 1-2 right now.
Yeah, I mean, it took a miracle to get them there.
Yeah.
So, that's the whole thing. You know, they've really played two good quarters of football. Maybe you could – yeah, I think it was 3-3 at the end of the first quarter on Thursday. So you give them that quarter, and maybe it's a good quarter against the 49ers. But there's been a lot more bad than good through the first three games of the season. A lot more reasons to have questions. Now, it was interesting because I was talking to Xavier McKinney yesterday, and I was like, well, should people remember, that the two losses are against the Cowboys and the 49ers, two very good teams. And it's like, no, we don't think that way. We don't think about the opponent. We think about what we're supposed to do. And if you put it in that light, that's fine. You can put it in that light. He's like, if we do what we're supposed to do, we can beat anybody. That's fine. But they haven't done what they're supposed to do. It's kind of like what Darius Slayton said, I think, about the Cowboys. Is it okay for people to say, hey, you can't beat the Cowboys? Like, I can't say that we can because we haven't, until they do it, there's going to be lots of doubt, and there's lots of doubt right now.
For sure. And I think your headline of a post you did a couple days ago summed it up perfectly. The Giants need to get a lot of things fixed fast or the season will be over soon. I mean, that sums up everything we've just said, given how the schedule falls early on and all of their wide-ranging problems that have been exposed through this 1-2 start, in which, as you said, they've played exactly one good half of football. And so, we all knew that this first six games is going to be a gauntlet. And now here comes the third primetime game in 4 weeks on Monday night against Seattle. They played on Sunday night. They played on Thursday night. Now a Monday night game. Then they get the Bills in week six on Sunday night. So four of the first six, three of the first five and primetime. So the nation, nationally televised audience getting a chance to see this Giant team, and it has not been a great product so far. Obviously they don't care what time the game is at, but yeah. And I think another thing you brought up just defensively, if they want to play better here in primetime, is how they kind of marry up man coverage and blitzes and the riskiness with which they play defense and how long Wink Martindale may continue to stick with that approach.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote about that for this morning. They on dropbacks, I think it was 84.6%. They blitzed Brock Purdy the other night, and he kind of carved them up for, it wasn't all on blitzes, but he ended up throwing for 310 yards and two touchdowns. And they've blitzed, I think they've blitzed 53% of the time, more than half the time they're blitzing. And they, have two sacks, no takeaways to show for it. You're not getting your bang for your buck. And they're, I think they're, I forget the exact number I wrote today, and I don't have the story in front of me, but they're in the bottom 15 in pressure percentage too. And they're also haven't been good on third down and red zone defense, which they were very good at last year. I mean, they were exceptional at that, which is why they were able to win a lot of those close games, because they kept the scoring down because they were so good in the red zone and third down. They haven't been good at any of those things so far. I talked to Xavier McKinney, and Adoree Jackson was kind of a lean locker room yesterday in terms of who was available to talk to after the like practice. But, they both were, on board, hey, when Wink became our defensive coordinator, we knew what was coming, you know, because a lot of it is put on the secondary, obviously. And we want to keep blitzing. We want to keep doing what Wink loves to do, and eventually it'll all turn around. Well, again, they go back to, okay, that's fine. Let's see it, you know.
So just to put a bow statistically on what you were alluding to there, Brock Purdy had 39 dropbacks in that game. The Giants blitzed him on 33 of the 39 dropbacks, and he completed 19 of 31 passes for 252 yards, two touchdowns.
No, on the blitzes, yeah, he threw for 310 overall, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did most of his work when they blitzed him. Of course, they blitzed him almost every play.
Right. You know, and you know, there's a school of thought that Wink blitzes too much, that he, you know, and there was a quote, and I picked this out of a Baltimore Sun story from last year, quote from Harbaugh, after they lost a game to Pittsburgh, and not last year, in 2021, Wink's last year as the Ravens defense coordinator, about how you go to the well once too often, you're going to get burned, you know, you know, which may have been the beginning of the end for their relationship in terms of it being a coach and defense coordinator together. You know, but the Giants apparently aren't there right now. They, you know, they still, and Wink we trust, or as I wrote today, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. You know, it's fine, but you got to prove it on the field. I understand it's philosophy, and probably Wink's never going to change that philosophy because it's what he believes in. It's what he was raised on as a defensive guy. But you know, the proof is in the pudding, and so far, the bowl's empty.
Yeah, pretty much. Very true. And I mean, just they blitzed Brock Purdy 33 times. Okay, they got pressure. The Giants did. Only on 17 of those 33, including two sacks. So they got pressure 17 times out of 31. Out of 33, which is okay.
That's fine.
But he was able to get the ball off in 19 of 31 for 252 and two touchdowns. And that gets back to also, you know,
right. How pressure's relative somewhat. I mean, if he's being hurried, but you know, he's being hurried, but the guy he's thrown to is wide open because you blitzed. You know, what good's that pressure?
Which gets back to a lot of the chicken and egg stuff about blitzing so much and leaving so many guys in man coverage, especially when you're having back end tackling issues after the catch. These are all things that make the whole product just look bad. So that's where they're at. And I think as we turn our focus to Monday night, they have a really tough receiver matchup in DK Metcalf. And I got a chance to talk to Deontay Banks yesterday in the locker room. And one of the reasons why they drafted this kid was because he's a physical corner. They needed a physical man coverage corner, and he was not going to back down. And that's what he's prided himself on. Well, you know, now he goes against a guy who's basically a unicorn in the NFL in terms of like the size and the physicality in DK Metcalf. This is a huge challenge. And Banks said he expects to cover Metcalf quite a bit. And now Xavier McKinney did note, you know, for good receivers like that, they're going to shade a safety over. So there will be coverage help, but huge test coming up for Deontay Banks here.
Well, absolutely. I do, you know, he hasn't been great, but he's been okay for a rookie, I think. I like the way he goes about his business. Nothing seems to phase Deontay Banks, you know, and I can see a scenario where he becomes in time becomes a really, really good a shutdown corner. But he's not there yet. And this is probably his biggest challenge so far. CeeDee Lamb is obviously a tough challenge too. Although CeeDee will line up in the slot occasionally and move all over. And I'm sure they'll move Metcalf around too. But you know, this is probably his biggest challenge, a big physical guy, you know, but it's a challenge for the whole secondary. And this is a pretty good balanced team too, because they have Kenneth Walker in the backfield, another tough back for them to go against. I'm not sure he's Christian McCaffrey, but he's pretty good. Christian McCaffrey is an animal after watching him. The 49ers just have so many weapons. They will not face as many weapons this week against the Seahawks. As great as Geno Smith's story has been, he was a comeback player of the year last year, played a great game against them, and then didn't he dedicate it, I think, to Dave Gettleman? So he played a really good game, and he's a great story in terms of his comeback. But the Seahawks aren't the 49ers. They'll be a tough opponent, and they've already got a really good win under their belt by going to Detroit and beating the Lions right after the Lions have beaten Kansas City and in Kansas City. But this isn't going to be as tough a game, as tough as opponent. It could be a toughest game, but it's not going to be as tough an opponent as the 49ers.
Yeah, and of course, the return of Julian Love, who signed with Seattle in free agency, one of the Giants' leaders last year. He's a fine player. He's a good player.
He's very good at. He's good at coming up and hitting people. Stopping the run is his strength. Coverage is not, but stopping the run and he's a good blitzer too. So he's got some skills that you can use to your advantage, and Pete Carroll is one of the best at putting together defenses. So
for sure, and I think right now this team needs leadership, and I'm not saying they lack it, but his return here kind of puts a spotlight on how big of a leader he was for that locker room last year. And I'm not saying they're seeking out that or they're missing that, but this. It does tie into the fact that this is a time where they need their leaders to lead, right? I mean, they have some guys in there like Adoree Jackson, Leonard Williams. I'm just talking specifically about the defense, who need to demand more from these guys. Whether that's Kayvon Thibodeau, a younger guy who is still kind of working on his emotional maturity and all that stuff. I think that they need someone to do what Julian Love did last year. And I'm not saying that's not happening, but this is the time for it to happen.
Yeah. I think Bobby Okereke, once he gets more settled in, can be that kind of guy. He's a smart guy who I think has a vocal side to him, but he's got to get settled in first and become a trusted player in that locker room. Xavier's kind of a leader, but I don't think he's a real demanding leader. Julian was a different kind of leader. He was everybody knew he was smart. Everybody knew he was going to be where he was supposed to be in terms of the defense. They asked a lot of him. I mean, that to me was his greatest value last year, was when McKinney went down after the bye week. He really stood up and held things together defensively after McKinney went down. He's a different kind of player than Xavier. Xavier's probably a more talented player. But Julian was, if not the best leader on that defense last year, certainly one of them. You talk about Dexter and Leonard Williams. They're both really good players, and they're actually both playing okay. They both played pretty good against the 49ers, played very well. But neither one is really a vocal leader, Kayvon could be that, I think, but I think right now Kayvon's just trying to, get himself squared away and become the player that he wants to be. So he's been kind of quiet, more quiet than he was a year ago, I think, because he's a little bit, I don't want to say confused, but just he last week, before the Niners game, he talked about, asking him to do different things and was kind of defensive about his own play. But I think he knows deep down that he's not doing the things that he's capable of doing. And, he's not going to be the leader of the defense until he is, when he's all over the field and playing like he did against the Cowboys in Dallas last year and the Commanders in Washington. Until he does those kinds of things, he's not going to be the vocal leader of this team.
Well said. And just to kind of tie up what we talked about DK Metcalf and how dangerous he is. Well, he hung 112 yards in the Panthers last week and then 75 the week before that in Detroit. Seattle won both games. after losing the opener to the Rams, and Metcalf in that game had 47 and a touchdown. So obviously a really dangerous receiver. Yeah, I guess we
can... Tyler Lockett said, what's he had? Four straight 4,000 or 1,000 yard seasons. And the year before that, he had 965. So he's not off to a hot start at all, but yep. He's also dangerous. So.
He is. Yeah. And a guy who at 5'10", 182 profiles as, I would guess that they don't have Banks cover him. But yeah, certainly dangerous, even at, how old is he? He's about to turn, well, tomorrow he turns 31. So, yeah. So at this stage of his career, still really productive, spent his whole career in Seattle. Guy's got 56 touchdown catches in his career. You know, not bad for a third round pick. That's what they do so well there. I mean, they've nailed the middle round picks for so many years, going Russell Wilson, man, Richard Sherman, all those guys who have come through there, through the Pete Carroll, John Schneider Seahawks have, a lot of those guys were mid-round picks, and that's where you wind up, you know, becoming a successful team. Is that, you know, anyone can hit on a high pick. I think it just gets down to for taking that next step, being able to have enough of those mid-round picks, which the Giants just haven't had. I think that the fact that Josh Azudu can't get on the field as a third-round pick last year, not great. Cordell Flott, third round pick last year. It was a healthy scratch last week. They played Darnay Holmes over him, who is obviously underwhelmed. And he's another example. Darnay Holmes, fourth round pick, has not delivered. Matt Parrott, third round pick. Like they wouldn't put him on the field. It seems like if he was the last guy, a healthy guy on their offensive line. Aaron Robinson, third round pick in 2021, can't stay healthy. So yeah, that just underscores, a lot of the problems they've had in the middle rounds, which is a whole entirely different topic. But the fact that they're playing, I think, a team this week who's been so consistent, so good, and has built that on mid-round picks, puts, I think, a bit of a spotlight maybe on how bad the Giants have been over that time.
I mean, Seattle is, as you pointed out, one of the best at doing that. And they, you know, by doing it last year, they, you know, the Giants were certainly one of the surprise playoff teams last year. Maybe Seattle was even more, especially given that they, you know, Geno Smith had basically not played at all for 5 years and all of a sudden comes back and, you know, replaces Russell Wilson and takes him to the playoffs. That was, they probably were an even bigger surprise than the Giants to get into the playoffs last year. But, you know, these two teams were the surprise teams of the NFL last year for sure. You know, the one other thing I wanted to get to from that Niners game, if we go back a second, is I'm going to be interested this week. I think they come out on Friday, is to see what the fines are this week. Bobby Okereke, he had a pretty hefty fine for what I thought was like a rather innocent play where he in Arizona, where he went in after the quarterback and he hit him on the head. Came down and hit him on the head. It didn't look like it was intentional or anything, but he got, I think, $16,000 fine for that. You know, the 49ers, Trent Williams, I don't know how he didn't get thrown out of that game for what he did. And then
he punched who did he punch?
Bijan Robinson.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it was Bijan a punch. Robinson.
Yeah, and then maybe even worse than that was what Jake Rendell did to Davidson, which is, and as you mentioned at the top of the show, we don't know how badly hurt he is again, and it'd be a shame if he was really hurt, because he's, you know, he was playing okay last year. In week five in London, he tore his ACL and was done for the year. If this is something like that, it puts this kid out for a year. You know, to me, that was even more egregious than the Trent Williams punch, because it was, I mean, he took him after the play was over and just threw him down by the arm. I'm really curious to see what those two guys are fined this week, and if they're not fined more than Okereke was for what he did, I'm livid if I'm the Giants. I really am.
Yeah, and a lot. Obviously, these fines are slotted, I think, for first offense, second offense, but there's I would think some wiggle room in there. But throwing a punch is borderline ejectionable.
Right.
Ejectable, whatever.
That was just ridiculous, though.
Yeah, so that'll be something to look for when I think Friday or Saturday when these fines come out. But yeah, that's the Giants are trying to find their footing here, trying to see, you know, not just DJ Davidson, of course, is an unknown health thing here. We'll see on Saquon Barkley. They're trying to just very broadly do what the Seahawks have done under Pete Carroll, and that's they've made the playoffs 10 of 13 years under him. Granted, they have not been back to the conference championship game since 2014 when they lost the Super Bowl, coming off the 2013 Super Bowl win, which was here at MetLife Stadium, and they crushed the Broncos in that game. Yeah, I mean, that to get to the playoffs 10 or 13 years, that's what they're trying to build with the Giants. Once you get in, you give yourself a chance. So I think more narrowly, let's do a two-pronged prediction here. So, okay, we'll just say, like, I'll just go one by one. Do you think the Giants will have Saquon Barkley Monday night?
I'm going to say no. I covered NFL off and on since 2003 for about a 15-year period. And I don't know too many guys who've come back in 2 weeks from a high ankle sprain. I can't remember any. That doesn't mean it didn't happen, but at least my memory, which admittedly is going with age, but in my memory, I don't remember anybody coming back from a high ankle sprain in 2 weeks.
I agree. The Giants will not have Barkley. Will they have Andrew Thomas?
I'm going to say yes, they will have Andrew Thomas. You know, they've had 3 weeks now to work on him. That they didn't play him. I think holding him out was probably the smart move, because if you do start aggravating a hamstring, they can linger. So I do think we'll see Andrew Thomas back.
All right, I agree. So we don't need to predict every injured player, but those two being the big ones, the biggest ones, since we know Ben Bredesen's coming back, we'll see on Azeez Ojulari. But yes, I think that they will have Thomas, but not Barkley. I agree with you there. How do you see things pick-wise for this game?
No, I haven't given it a lot of thought, but I just think the Giants are going to be desperate and they're going to win a tight game. I'm going to say 20-17.
Yep, I think without Saquon Barkley, they're going to have to win a low-scoring game. They're going to need their defense to be certainly better than they were against the Niners. And as you mentioned, doing it against a team that's not as imposing across the board in terms of talent. Like, man, the Niners have done such an awesome job of building that team. It's unbelievable. Like, if they had hit on Trey Lance, or if they had Brock Purdy's a very good quarterback, I think, but I don't think anyone would say, like, okay, he's their best player. But man, if they had a guy in there who was like a sure thing, franchise quarterback type, right? Maybe Purdy grows into that. There's already one of the best teams in the league. Their roster talent is unbelievable.
It's deep.
the Seattle is not that, and the Giants get Seattle at home. Seattle having to come all the way across the country. Giants on extra rest. This is a must win. I don't know if it's a should win game for the Giants, but like, they have to show up. Like, I don't think this, if the Giants get blown off the field in this spot, then they have some major, major problems. This team is in deeper mud than we thought.
The spread tells you what the odds makers think. Is they think Seattle's the better team, but the Giants are home. So
what's the line?
The spread is 1.5
for the Giants. Yeah,
for the Giants are favored by 1.5. So they think that Seattle's a little bit better team. But the Giants are home. That's the only reason they're the favorite.
Yep, home teams, I guess, typically get 3 points. So I will go with the Giants in this one, at the risk of having the exact same score. I'll say 24-21. Why not? A little bit higher on both numbers there, but a very close game, close win for the Giants. A much-needed critical win. Because it gets no easier. You know, they have to go down to Miami and play a team that hung 70 points, obviously, on the Broncos, who are really bad. But still, my gosh.
You
know,
you got the Buffalo game in there, which is
the Bills, you know, have figured it out since week one. Yeah.
You know, I guess the biggest break they've got is that Jets game doesn't look nearly as scary as it once did. So that helps them. You know, the Raiders probably can win at home if they, you know, if things go their way. You know, but then now they got to they got a quarterback issue, right? Or
yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo. I think what is it? Is he dealing with a concussion or?
I think I guess. But Carr was the one who got hurt worse. I'm thinking Carr.
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo's got a concussion, and then Derek Carr with the Saints has got the AC joint sprain. The Giants don't play the Saints until mid-December, but who knows?
Right. So that, but then they go to the Cowboys. You know, the Patriots probably are better than we give them credit for after beating the Jets. You know, that's never an easy game. Winning at Washington's never easy. The Packers are probably a little bit better than we thought they were going to be. You know, they. Every one of the Rams are probably a little bit better than we thought they were going to be. And the Eagles are the Eagles. To me, the Eagles and the 49ers, I might put the 49ers a little bit in front of the Eagles right now, but to me, they are arguably the two best teams in the certainly the NFC and maybe the whole NFL. You know, they're both really good teams.
I mean, just to level it out, like if the Giants go 1-2 in the stretch, and that puts them at 2-4. They got six more games until their bye week. In order to get back to 500, they'd have to go 4-2, right? Over the course of Washington, right. Jets, Raiders, right. Cowboys, Washington, right. Cats. I mean, if they start 1-5, then you got to turn right back around and go 5-1 against those six games just to get back to 500, entering your bye week going into December. Which is why 1-5, forget it. And maybe 2-4, you're treading water. Wouldn't even be the right use of the word treading water. You're under, but, yes, the schedule.
You're gurgling.
Yeah. This is a huge game. It's just, I mean, you understand why they lost to the Niners. I totally get it. There's no shame in that loss. Losing to the Cowboys, like the score makes it worse, but you know, that was a game where you probably figured maybe the Giants would lose. They won a game they were supposed to win in Arizona, albeit in having to pull a rabbit out of the hat. But this now looms as a huge one, an early must win. So we'll see what happens. Appreciate everybody listening. Be sure to subscribe, follow, rate, review on all your favorite podcasting platforms. And we will be back with you guys next week. Maybe we'll do it Tuesday, I think, next week, because then the Giants are back on kind of their regular schedule. a short week, shortish week going to Miami. So that's worth noting too, as they go on this two-game, I guess, road swing. And then the Dolphins, of course, do not play on Monday night this week. They play the Bills. The Dolphins play the Bills at 1 o'clock on Sunday. So they get an extra day, obviously coming off a huge game, but should be a fun game. So, all right, we'll talk to you guys next week on Tuesday. Everybody take care.